Hello, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you?
I'm doing okay today. How are you?
Pretty good. And if ever anybody's wondering why we kind of chuckle, it's because this is take three.
Yes. I'm saying hello.
Okay. Yeah, how bad can that be? So we'd like to thank everyone who's joining us today for this episode. If you are not subscribed to us, please consider clicking the subscribe button on whichever platform you're watching, viewing, listening, whatever. Give us a thumbs up, a like, whatever positive reinforcement mechanism there is on the platform that you're using. We have all the links for anything paranormalist related down below. Linktree, Facebook page, email address, buy me a coffee. No obligation, but it's always appreciated. Keeps the boat afloat. And I think with that, I'm done with this part. So I'm anxious to hear what you have prepared for us.
Well, we're going to be jumping around a little bit, but the first thing I wanted to talk about were Russian UFO files.
Oh, that's got to be interesting.
Yeah, well, I was like, I do these deep dive things, and I was in some Black Vault areas for the CIA. There's these areas called Black Vault you can get into. And then I was over, and there is a website called the Black Vault. And I went over there, and I was poking around and found some really interesting stories. And it's maybe not going to be the longest episode we had, but I found these stories fascinating. And one of the things that I learned, I noted when I began to read and do this, is that there are some very big similarities to American UFO sightings, okay? But there's also there are also things that are very different from American UFO sightings. Now, whether that's just in the way they phrase things or if there's something else going on, I'm not sure. But I just thought it was really interesting. And so as these files have come open and we're now able to read this stuff, I pulled some of my favorite ones that thought I'd share.
Very good.
So these files have been declassified since the Soviet era. You know, there's also a lot of stuff that came here that was classified. We took a ton of stuff out of the Soviet Russia whenever it collapsed. And now they're beginning to just post them. So one of the things that I came across was mentioned a Soviet K-22 submarine that was being, basically it was in the water, it was moving along, it began to on radar pick up these other unidentified objects, and they didn't leave the print of another sub or anything like that. They were definitely an interesting thing. So according to these records, these men on board the Soviet sub pick this up. They're beginning to watch it. They realize these things are on a trajectory to hit them. If they don't change at all, they're going to smack right into them. They, you know, they're trying to figure out whether they should be taking evasive action, if you should be shooting at them, you know, what's going on. Now, this is in the Southern Pacific Ocean, and they're just not sure. This is a nuclear submarine. You do not want it to be, it's, you know, expensive and what have you. So this was a routine operation, shouldn't have been any problems, and yet there it was. So then they begin to say, well, there has to be a malfunction of the instruments. It just has to be. As they're watching, they realize that there's interference now suddenly coming into their equipment, and they can't figure out what's going on. And they're beginning to have more of a visual of what's going on. And they're beginning to realize that there are these craft, these large circular craft moving smoothly under the water in their direction. And they, you know, they label them as USOs, then UFO presence. And they keep watching and says, on several occasions, the instruments began to give readings of material objects moving at incredible speeds. The calculations showed the speeds to be between 230 and 265 knots or miles per hour. speeding so fast, it was a challenge even on the surface to be able to avoid them. But water resistance is much higher. It's likely these objects defied the laws of physics to be able to move that quickly. There's only one explanation. Whatever these creatures were, they built something that surpasses our own development. At the last second, they blink out, just gone. The equipment becomes online again. The electronic resistance and interference changes, and these men are left wondering what was tailing them, what was chasing them, and where did it go? The only correlations that you could make to this is you hear similar stories in the Bermuda Triangle of, you know, objects on radar and then they're gone. Things moving faster than it's known that they should be able to move and they're gone. The electronic interference is a big common staple in the Bermuda Triangle incidents. The equipment goes crazy, the radar goes wonky, you know, they can't read their instruments, and then whatever happens, happens. So I thought it was a fascinating story. There's a lot of more material. I'm sure that it happens in the United States. I think they just don't tell us. But there's a lot of encounters in the Soviet files from subs.
If I get a chance to talk to, I have a brother who's a year and a half younger who spent 6 years in the Navy. And a lot of the places that he traveled to, he can't talk about.
Right.
It was also a nuclear submarine. So I hope to see him over Christmas. So maybe I'll have a chance to talk to him and see if he's got any stories. Although, if you recall, he's the paranormal denier.
Yes. Well, and you know, and when it comes to the UFOs, I've never been quite sure why we lump them as paranormal. Because, I mean, they're not paranormal. Like, I don't think they're spiritual.
Well, they're not supernatural.
They
are paranormal, but
they're
out of the range of normal. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I just find it interesting. There's a researcher by the name of Vladimir Azaza. I'm hoping I say his name right. I mean to say it right. Who has been collecting these stories. And he had another story from 1984 where a Soviet submarine collided with two underwater UFOs. The supposition that seemed to be most prevalent in these stories was that there are underwater bases, which we know from both merchant, you know, shipping and what have you, and other sources that, you know, there's sightings of ships, UFO ships going into or out of the water in many, many locations. The Great Lakes are filled with these stories. The oceans are filled with these stories. Many more stories, I'm sure, than we've ever heard. But if they are going to inhabit this planet and they want to do so surreptitiously for whatever the reason, it would make much more sense to go underwater than to live on land. First of all, most of the planet's covered by water. Second of all, this effectively, you know, is a cloaking device for them because we aren't able to go after them. We can't go down there and see. I've always been puzzled, is a good word, by the fact that United States and Russia were so gangbusters about going into space. Not even going to get into whether we did it or not. But we have never yet conquered our own Earth. We have no clue what's under the water.
And, well, for good reason. I mean, most of us living at sea level or thereabouts are used to having one atmosphere of pressure on us. We go to space, it's zero atmospheres of pressure, all right? That variance is not that much, but we don't have to go down very far in the ocean to be under enormous numbers of atmospheres of pressure. So we really don't have technology that lets us go that deep. Especially without great peril to whomever's it may be in the craft.
But I would, and I'm not in a debate with you or anything like that, but I would argue that if we had spent the amount of money we spent on space travel, we might have been able to conquer some of those issues.
Yeah, but we might not have Velcro either.
I could live without Velcro. I could. I was telling somebody the other day, just an aside, I was doing some reading and I was like, we Americans complicate everything. Like, we just do. It's the way our brains function. So whenever the space race was going on, the Soviet Union and the United States both had to figure out how do you, back then they were, the computers were large and cumbersome and what have you. And so they were trying to find ways that they can make like field notes on paper. And they found that ink won't flow in space. So the Soviets came up with, we'll write with a pencil, and we spent about $1 million trying to figure out how to make a pen that could write in space.
Well, we did too. I mean,
so, yeah, but, yes. But yep, I mean, it was the simple answer, just write with a pencil.
Yep.
So, but anyhow, I just thought that was funny. And I just, it was just, it's just the intrinsically different way we look at the world than other people. And we don't think about it, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
So there was another story that this researcher posted. It's from a Russian naval vessel, and it encountered multiple events of encountering UFOs in the water. They actually have been doing interviews with some of the people who were former military and actually made it onto their national TV. They seem that, and he said, he's doing research, as he said, they think that they're seeing most of the UFO activity in the Atlantic Ocean in the deepest parts and in the southern part of the Bermuda Triangle in the Caribbean, which is interesting because maybe that's what's causing the jam-ups in the Bermuda Triangle. Maybe it's a more deliberate act. And he cites a case of 6 unknown objects that followed a nuclear submarine in the Pacific. The sub surfaced to avoid collision. The 6 objects surfaced too. Then as the people aboard the sub were watching, the 6 objects, saucer-shaped objects, classic saucers, lifted themselves out of the water, flew at rapid speed straight up, and then shot straight forward and disappeared. So, I mean, these are eyewitness accounts of multiple people. These are fascinating to me. One of the and most interesting ones I found, though, was from a military diver in Serbia's Lake Bukel. I'm hoping, pronouncing it right. I don't speak Russian, so bear with me, guys. So it's one of the world's deepest lakes. I think it is the deepest lake. There was a diver's going down for the military, and they encountered a group of humanoid creatures dressed in silver suits at a depth of 160 feet. 3 humans died trying to chase these entities, humanoid-like entities. The rest had to surface, and when they went down again, they could find no trace. Now, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, especially if they were just, yeah, I'm assuming they were wearing some type of protective gear. But again, the same kind of technology that would allow you to have a craft to survive the extreme pressure of the deep ocean. Yeah, you would think that that would, whatever technology that is, whether it forms, it's such a cliche word to say, a force field, mm-hmm. as it were, around something to permit it to live, to exist there without being crushed. I don't know why you couldn't do the same thing around a person, but you'd think it would sort of look like a bubble. But then again, I don't want to make suppositions on technologies I don't understand.
Exactly. Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting because these things were able to go so deep that people died trying to pursue them, and they finally had to pull out. And it obviously didn't deter the people that were being chased, whatever these beings were. I mean, and they said humanoid only in that they had legs and arms, and they couldn't see anything else. They could have been, you know, little grays or large grays or reptilians or whatever. They obviously had the technology to go a lot deeper than we could. So in 1989, TASS, which was the Soviet press agency, that is not something that makes me trust them, let me tell you. But they reported in September 27th of that year that these tall, three-eyed aliens with small heads showed up in a small city called Voronezh. And they arrived in a shiny ball, circular ball, bringing with them robots that were like workers for them. According to this, the quote, scientists have confirmed that an unidentified object recently landed in a park in a Russian city, and they named the city. Associated Press translation provides it this way. They have identified a landing site and found traces of aliens who made a short promenade at the park. Two pieces of unidentified rock made of a substance that is not found on Earth were obtained. The agency maintained that the story was true. And a few days later, the New York Times reported it as true, stating the aliens were wearing silvery overalls and bronzed colored boots. This was following a previous report. And in October of the same year, a third report comes out. Now, this report is in a newspaper called The Socialist Industry. And they talk about a young lady who was a farm girl. They call her a milkmaid, but that's kind of a quaint, antiquated term. And but she obviously was working on a farm somewhere. And a creature that looked like a man but was taller than average with shorter legs. And that he had been seen stealing apples. And that there had been what they call influence of energies. I don't know what that means. Found at the site where the man was seen, leading geologists to conclude they've discovered a landing field for flying saucers. Does that mean radiation?
Your guess is as good as mine on that one.
Right. And they interviewed people who had seen this event or some piece of this event. And it's fascinating to go down through it. It talks about what did you see, and there's this really interesting little exchange here. So the story just transcribed a telepathic discourse between a gentleman by the name of Pavel Morhatov, and a journalist from Riga, and an extraterrestrial. So Morhatov said, "Where are you from?" The entity said, "The red star of constellation of Libra is our home." And the reporter said, how does one find your way there? The entity took it to mean, "I want to go there." And he said, "That would mean no return for you and danger for us. Cannot do this." The reporter says, "What danger?" "Thought bacteria," was the reply. And the entity said, "Thought bacteria all over this planet. Can't take it with us."
Now, I wonder if that's a euphemism for something else, or just what that is. But that's, wow, thought bacteria. Two words I never would have thought would have gone together. But
well, I mean, like, you think about it, there's people that think all kinds of crazy things. And, you know, maybe that's what they're talking about, that, you know, we get infected with crazy thoughts. Mm. And maybe they're susceptible to picking up our thoughts or something. And it would cause unrest for them. If they all think like a hive mind, then putting stray thoughts into it would be possibly quite detrimental. But it's interesting. These are so different from American experiences, aren't they?
Very much so. But then, again, like you mentioned before, how many of these things may have been suppressed?
Go ahead.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're just your average Joe or Jane, and you know, people do talk, so unless they are silenced in some way, mm-hmm. you know, do the Russians have their versions of Men in Black that would be coercing, you know, stifling information, whatever? Have you come across anything like that? That, or has Men in Black really been a U.S. only? I mean, we did an episode on that, but
yeah, no, England, Europe seems to have them, but then they're much more similar Western culture-wise than the Soviet Union would be. The I'm not saying they don't exist in the Soviet or in Russia, in Eastern Europe and what have you. I can tell you, I had some interest in, there's a story a little further down here that I want to tell that'll a little illustrate this. So basically, I'll just kind of give you the gist of it now. These gentlemen were Americans. They were traveling on a military, kind of quasi-military mission. They go to Russia and they're introduced to this official in Russia who's kind of hosting them as they're going through. So he's driving them from point A to point B and kind of making sure they get someplace to eat and, you know, that kind of stuff, and kind of controlling who they talk with. So they're on a particularly long journey, and this man, this Russian, speaks pretty good English, which was apparently a lot better than we spoke Russian. And so they're talking, and the night before he picked them up, these two of these three men had witnessed something happening in the sky. It looked like a great big ball of light came, but it stopped and just paused and hovered in the sky, then shot up and shot back the way it came, which, you know, if it was a meteor or something, it would have just continued on its trajectory and hit the earth. So they're discussing it in the car with this man in the car, and he makes a joke and he says, could be your UFO. And they're like, yeah, right. And he's like, you don't believe in UFOs? And there was like a change in his tone and attitude. And the one guy said, of course not. That's crazy. And the official, Russian official, pulls off the road. He turns around and he looks at them and he said, you don't know about UFOs? And the guys are like, yeah, we know about them, but they're not real. And he goes, I don't want to talk to you anymore. And he just gets very quiet, gets them to where they got to go. And then the next day, a new dude shows up.
Wow. Okay.
But it was interesting because it was just a casual conversation and a joke. Like, he could have just played it off and said, yeah, that's what I was meaning. It's funny, hilarious. Ha ha ha. But he was struck by the fact that their government doesn't tell them about these UFOs. The thought being that, you know, you're military, you should know like I do.
I see where you're going with it, yeah.
And when he realized they weren't going to talk, he immediately changes the subject and gets away from them. So did he slip of a tongue? Was that what his concern was? Like, fearfully, like, oh my gosh, they're going to go tell somebody? What was it? I don't know, but it was interesting. Just because, you know, it was so odd. So we're going to go to 1959, and this would have been in then Soviet-controlled Poland. February of that year, witnesses in an area called, I'm going to spell it G-D-Y-N-I-A, Gladnia, maybe? And I know we have a lady in Poland who listens. So you can correct me, as I'm sure I said that badly. I apologize sincerely. But they saw a glowing light falling from the sky, plunging into the waters of the harbor. It was winter, so there was like lots of ice across the water and what have you. It created quite a excitement, as you can well imagine. People thought at first it was an aircraft that had gone down, and a search and rescue effort began. There were teams of divers. Can't even imagine going into that icy water as a diver, God love them. And in the muck at the bottom, they found a piece of a silvery metal that was not rusted, and it was assumed to be part of whatever had come crashing down, because it was still in really good physical shape and hadn't had any other damage. The metal was turned over to the Polish Navy, and it was sent to the Polytechnic Institute in that city, and it just vanished. There's no record of anything after.
Oh, yeah. You mean when it vanished, it just vaporized, or, you know, just
the record of it doesn't exist. They acknowledge it was received, and from that point forward, there's nothing. You hit a wall. in the meantime, the Navy did close the whole area down. They had restricted access. And after a few days, there was military personnel coming in what they, and they were looking all over. They were looking on land, like they, around the harbor. They began a search of the land around the harbor. And this is when it gets interesting. A strange silhouette humanoid appeared to be wearing a uniform of some sort and was injured with burns on its face and was found crawling across the beach in exhaustion, wet, and apparently not far from the water. So it looked like it crawled out of the water. Soldiers attempted to communicate with this being, which they took as male, but they could not speak in any language it spoke. He was seriously injured, and it was arranged to bring this thing to the hospital under armed guard to be medically tended. At the hospital, the uniform, well, they attempted to remove the uniform, and it was made of a metallic material, and they could not cut it off. They could not pull it from his skin. They could not make it move in any way. It had no buttons, no zippers, no way to take it off or on that they could see, and it couldn't be cut or torn no matter what they did. The appearance was almost human in every respect, other than the burns and what have you. Mm-hmm. And it had extra digits on its fingers and toes and small minor differences. His ears were shaped slightly different, things like that. They attempted to render medical aid to the burns on its face, and they had pulled on a little armband that was on this being, and when they were able to loosen the armband, he went into immediate cardiac arrest and died.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Whatever that was. The body was autopsied. And they had to use specialized equipment to cut off the uniforms. They actually had to use probably lasers or something.
Whenever you said they couldn't cut through it, I said, well, how'd they autopsy? But I should have just waited and you would have answered.
Well, I mean, I'm just giving you all the story. I'm just saying these are the stories I'm hearing. And they said it had a completely different circulatory system than a human being, and the organs were different and in different places. So it was not a biological human in any way. Supposedly a second one of these creatures was found on the beach within a few hours of this first one, as though they might have escaped from whatever pod or craft or whatever it was. And it was in a coma-like state. It was placed into the frozen stasis and whisked away. The bodies and whatever was taken out of the water subsequently, probably pieces of the craft or the craft itself. It has been written about by UFO researcher Arthur Shuttlewood, if people want to go look and see what else there is to the story. And everybody's been afraid to talk about it. Like eyewitnesses, military, those people won't talk about it. But local people who were there around that time have heard the stories. It's either a great urban legend or it's got some teeth, one of the two. I just thought it was fascinating. And it's only one of several. Like there are other accounts. In 1928, there was a lake near Shuknovolka. Okay. And an incandescent object with flames coming out of it crashed into the lake. And people began to talk about seeing water goblins in the lake and along the shore. These were dwarfish beings with hairless, rounded heads and thin arms and legs. They were described as wearing metallic, shiny one-piece suits. And the military, this is so typical. This is like the United States. The military and the police said it was a misidentification of seals in the lake. Swamp gas, anybody?
I was thinking swamp gas too. It's like, you know, like, oh, I'm thinking back to the movie Men in Black. You know, it was the planet Venus, you know.
Yeah. Swamp gas. And apparently wreckage was taken out of there as well. Some sort. And there's another one. 1997, Bay in the Bay of Finland, in St. Petersburg region of Russia, there was a craft that went down, and they found subsequently an elongated object at the bottom, and they described it as reminiscent of a cucumber. So it would be like a sub or something, you know, something in that general vicinity. And it was part of some sort of wreckage. It disappears as soon as it comes out of the water. They, you know, it gets whisked away, and then it becomes part of all this. It's, you know, part of the lore. Oh, you misunderstood what we saw. But here's this interesting thing again. Third one in a row, going from 23 all the way to now, to the 90s. The object was removed from the water, and it split open to regurgitate a bubble containing a humanoid creature with a porcelain white skin and bleeding wound. So there, and how this thing got opened is the diver was drilling into it to try to find places to put hooks into it to drag it out. That's how this thing happened. And they say that this is why the wound happened. So whatever this being was not a happy camper. And it lashed out with taloned hands to grab his arm and cut his flesh. The diver then used the drill in his hand to protect himself and attacked the being with it, at which point the being just went back into the water, and he lost consciousness, the diver, and he was hauled out of the water. And the next thing he remembers, he is on land. They're rendering medical aid. He has these great big deep cuts in his arms. He lost a part of his hand. And there were no signs of this craft that they had managed to get out of the water. It was gone.
Well, you know that swamp gas can be very dangerous.
Yeah. It can be. It can be extremely dangerous. I mean, and there are literally like 30 or 40 more of these reports. And they're all really interesting because they're so different in some ways. You know, in 1958, a Russian Tu-154 plane crashed into a lake because being pursued by UFOs, and he was trying to do evasive maneuvers. Fishermen claim they fished out ships, crafts, and creatures from the water in different places. In 1982, divers in a lake reportedly encountered a humanoid dressed in a silvery suit. There were several of them. And, you know, you can go on and on and on. There are just so many of these stories, and they're very different in a lot of ways from the stories that we hear in this country. One of the things I was struck with, a lot of the stories, and not the ones I featured because they were just like short vignettes, but there was a lot of the, they were green lights. Like, we always see UFOs in the United States are silver, gold. You see light that's, it might be alternating red, blue, green, you know, that these, they talk a lot about like these green lighted craft. And I just thought it was fascinating. There are so many of these stories, and literally you could go for hours just reading all these stories. And considering the fact that the United States government has finally, whatever you believe about why they're doing it or if they're telling the truth or not, begun talking about there being alien craft and aliens on this planet, this was fascinating to read these completely different encounters than what we see.
And this whole time I've been trying to figure out, or at least come up with a theory of why there'd be such a disparity like that. So things being suppressed being suppressed in North America, or, hear me out, the craft that they're seeing in, you know, former Soviet Union area, Russia, you know, that part of the world, are not extraterrestrial based, and they're maybe just future humans from that part of the world, and they just want to stick around there and look at them.
It could be. It could be a lot of different things.
You know, why else would it be so geographical, and why would it be so different from what we hear? You know.
Yeah. I mean, and if you look around the world, like You go down to South America, there's a ton. People do not realize that South America completely blows us out of the water with the number of UFO reports. And not UFO reports that are vague, but like entire stadiums are sitting there watching a ball game and these craft come out of nowhere and hover above the field. And, you know, 2,000 people see it, kind of deals. And the creatures that are seen are different too. They're more small creatures. They're chupacabra-like, if you will. They're less humanoid looking. And but there's a ton of these stories. Go to Africa, you're going to come across an entirely different set of stories. But it's the same central theme, but it's described completely differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so part going through my mind, I'm trying to figure out why would, looking for a logical reason why there would be different types of sightings geographically, and you know who lives there. You know, that's so that was the only thing right now that's come to mind. If I think of something else, then I'll jot it down and mention it to you. But I mean, that's the only thing that came. Because you know me, I'm trying to always try to find answers. But
yeah, and it's fascinating because there are just so many different things. And if anybody's interested, you can look up Black Vault Files from the CIA, militarily declassified files on Soviet UFOs sightings. There's all kinds of interesting ways to go about this. But it was just really interesting. Go to the Black Vault. There's a website called the Black Vault. A gentleman by the name of Mr. Greenwalt runs it. I've known him for years, not personally, but like casually. And I've always found his work to be amazingly interesting and accurate. So there are so many things to check out. But if you think that the UFO sightings that we have in this country are it, there are so many different types of UFO sightings, and the Soviet Union sightings, and the sightings in Europe, and the sightings in, you know, and I would imagine, although you don't hear many stories from like the Arabic countries and stuff, I'm sure they I do know they exist. I've read some stories of, you know, fighter pilots encountering these things like that.
I just thought of another idea.
Okay.
What happens? So it's widely accepted in the community that there are multiple races of aliens. Maybe the ones that they report in Russia are the ones that are in, they have some type of agreement with the Russian government. The ones we see in U.S. have an agreement with the U.S. government. The one we see in other places have agreements with those governments.
Now see, that one I can get behind, because I truly believe that these guys have negotiated some sort of treaty with them. I really do believe that's a big possibility. There's a crazy ass story that Jackie Gleason, the comedian, used to tell about being good friends with Nixon. Did you ever hear the story?
No, Nixon, I have not. I don't think so. Maybe. Go ahead, please. Yeah.
So Jackie Gleason and Nixon were really good buddies, and they were out in Nevada and kind of hanging out together, playing golf and what have you. They were, after the golf was over, they got to drinking, and Nixon got a little loose-lipped. And I can't even imagine being at this. There was near this base, military base. And he starts telling, Gleason was fascinated with UFOs, the whole concept. He was for many, many years. So he's like, why don't you tell me if you guys in the government got some of them UFOs, you know, kind of a deal. And Nixon's like, well, let me tell you. It'd scare you if I showed you what we got. And in the middle of the night, these two guys drunk drive up to the military base. And the poor guy who's standing at the gates, right, flashes a flashlight. And he'd be damned if it ain't Nixon and Jackie Gleason. And they're drunk as skunks. And he doesn't know what to do. And he's told, pass them through. So he passes them through. Supposedly, Nixon convinces the military guys there that he wants to go down to this particular level he knew about. And it was there that he took Gleason, and he showed Gleason things that freaked Gleason out so much he would never say what he saw the rest of his life. He only said he didn't want to talk about that crap ever again.
And you'd think in an inebriated state of mind that you would accept things a little bit better than you would. Look at that. That's funny. That kind of thing. Yep. But I mean,
I think it scared him sober again.
Wow.
There's this. Yeah. Gleason told that story the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. Yep. First time I've heard that one. So
I ran across that story. Oh my gosh. 4 or 5 years ago. And I'm like, no way. I mean, it is a UFO story, but it isn't a UFO story, but it was a story that Gleason told on at least 6 different occasions in his lifetime. And twice he did it on where he was being interviewed.
Yeah. And well, we can't ask him now.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. We could do an EVP session.
Yeah, I'll get right on that.
So anyway, that is what I wanted to share with everybody tonight. It's a fascinating subject. It brings up so many other questions, and I like the idea that maybe they somehow negotiated. Maybe even if the militaries in our countries didn't negotiate it, well, what if they had some sort of star treaty where they could only work in certain areas to not step on each other's toes? But something's going on. Something's definitely different.
Yeah, that only made sense to me because if you're traveling interstellar space,
yep,
one side of a globe isn't going to matter for the other side. So unless you have some type of agreement with the indigenous population, you know,
right,
that's the only thing I could, you know, that even fits better, I think, than the you know, descendants traveling back in time to look at that area. But especially with the different, describing them as different than, I mean, they may be humanoid, but they're certainly not human. Yeah. So that would, yeah, I'm leaning way towards that way now that there's collusion between them and specific governments.
So. Well, I mean, there are stories, there's many stories from the United States of such things happening, and that we are co-working with them in underground dumps. So.
Very interesting. I did enjoy this one quite a bit. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad.
And hope our listeners and viewers do too. Let us
know.
Yeah,
if you guys have ideas about this that we didn't think of, send us a drop us a note and let us know.
Perfect. And with that, I'll say good night.
And good night.